Hi, this is Lena Cardoso with Questions for My Ava. Each episode, we hold space for women to share their stories and perspectives with the goal of promoting intergenerational dialogue. In this episode, I talk with Sue. I read about Sue online and reached out to her and am so glad that she was willing to connect. We discuss a major life shift for Sue in 2001 during her first solo journey on the Camino de Santiago. Since then, Sue has walked the Camino 29 times and even coaches others to help them do the same. We discuss Sue's barefoot lifestyle. She has been primarily barefoot for the past 12 years. We discuss the health benefits Sue has noticed since going barefoot and how going barefoot has allowed Sue to better connect to nature and to herself. We also discuss Sue's cold water exposure practices and how cold water has allowed her to better connect to herself and her breath. We discuss Sue's mission of helping others connect back to nature and how she used TikTok to help her do that. And Sue shares some beautiful thoughts around overcoming fear, connecting with the earth, and evolving as we age. Hope you enjoy. So thank you so much for being here. I'm very excited to learn more about you. And I usually just start with a kind of an intro for everyone. So if you could say your name, where you're from, and your age, that'd be great.
Hi, my name is Sue Regan Kenny, and I'm from Muskoka, Ontario, and I am 66 years old.
Awesome. And I like to do, if you have a couple, I like when people just share like a couple facts about themselves. They can be fun facts. They can be something that's really basic or anything, but just so that anyone listening can get to know you a little bit better.
Okay. Well, I love to go barefoot. In fact, I've been barefoot for the last 12 years, almost all of the time, even in the winter. And I love ice baths. So I not only get into a tub filled with ice, but I love digging a hole in the ice in the winter in the lake and then getting in it. And also I went viral on TikTok doing barefoot videos. So I do have one video with 9.5 million views and I still can't believe it happened.
That's quite the reach when you really think about that many people. I do have a question about that later on actually. So
that's okay.
Thank you. And I think those facts transition perfectly into some of what I want to talk about. So
great.
I did some research about, from your website and from our initial conversation. And my understanding is there's kind of three big buckets I wanted to cover with you. So one is your barefoot lifestyle. The second being the Wim Hof method and cold water exposure, which I think are kind of linked. And please correct me if that's incorrect.
Yes. No, that's correct.
Okay. And then the third being your experience with the Camino de Santiago. And so I was thinking it might make sense either to start wherever you want to start or with whichever one came first. I feel like might be an interesting way to go about this if you can pinpoint that.
Okay. The Camino came first. Okay. So that would be the best lead in.
Yeah. So let's start there. So tell me please about how you decided to do the Camino de Santiago. And I know that you've done it 29 times at this point. So I have some follow-up questions, but I'd first love to just hear when, how it started.
Okay, the Camino. It was 2001 and I was working in the telecom industry as an account executive at Lucent Technologies and I got downsized. Downsizing was really new at that time. And so it was very difficult to understand what was going on. Everybody thought I'd been fired. And even I thought I was fired, but it was an actual downsizing. When I got home that day, I couldn't figure out what I should do with my life. And I thought I had really three choices. I could go back to school and finish my degree. I could get another job in telecom, or I could walk 800 kilometers across the north of Spain alone in the winter and see if I could discover what was important and what my life purpose was. And I chose number three. I left 5 weeks later. I walked alone. With each step I took forward, it was like I was walking back to my authentic self. And by the time I got to the end, 29 days later, I had really discovered my purpose in life. And I also got a clearer understanding about who I am and what I like about myself and what I didn't like about myself, but it was just a really close connection with myself. And that really led to becoming a storyteller and then becoming an author, writing a couple of books about the Camino. And then my book, My Camino, was optioned for a feature film 15 years ago. And it's still in development. It's getting really close now. So that was really the beginning of a complete shift in my life path.
Wow. Okay. A couple things I want to dig a little deeper on. So one is that you left 5 weeks later. So did you have time to prepare, or what was that preparation like?
Not physically prepare, but I was a master's rower and I was in great shape. I thought because I was in such great shape, I could easily walk 800 kilometers. Walking and training for rowing are very different. It was extremely difficult, but it was life-changing, as I said.
The second thing, and I'm wondering, I know it was a long time ago, and I think part of it is what's come after that experience, but what, if anything, surprised you that you learned about yourself?
On the Camino, I learned that I had fears, a lot of fears that were holding me back from being all that I could be. And I learned this story that if you pick up a stone and you put your sorrow into the stone, when you set it down, you leave some of your sorrow behind. Well, in fact, I discovered that a lot of my sorrow was related to my fears, and that by setting it down and letting it go, I could move forward. I also just discovered that every single day I was afraid. I was afraid of not speaking the language, of being alone, of getting stuck in a snowstorm, of not finding my way, of having no place to sleep. There were so many things to be afraid of. And I overcame each of those every day, day after day after day. And then by the end of the journey, I discovered that, you know, fear is real. And it's something that I feel to this day. But it doesn't mean that I had to stop, that I could still carry on, even though I was afraid, and just face the fear and move through it. I think that was one of the greatest lessons of the Camino.
It's almost like, I think when people tell you, like, it's okay to acknowledge an emotion, but not let it completely rule you. Like, you can acknowledge, yes, have it, and then keep going.
Anyway, like, just take another step. You know, pilgrims always say, just put one foot in front of the other. And it sounds so simple, but it's profound. When you're on the Camino and actually walking, you know, it was a total of a million steps. So that thought went through my mind many, many, many times.
Was there ever any part of you that thought you wouldn't be able to complete it?
Oh, yeah. Like, even on the second or third day, I was saying to myself, like, what am I doing here? Like, I don't have to prove anything to anybody. Like, what am I trying to prove something? Am I, like, what is this all about? And I, you know, I knew I could stop at any time. But I carried on. And there were many other times throughout the walk that I just wanted to pack it in, take a bus and go back home. But the thought came, I faced it and then moved on, because somebody always showed up or some scenario just opened up a whole new perspective of, you know, what the walk was about. And I just couldn't leave it. I kind of got addicted to walking.
That's interesting. So you were alone, you did it alone, but there's always, it's busy, right? So there's always people. So you found companionship along the way to an extent.
Yeah, it's busy today. When I walked in 2001, nobody knew about the Camino in North America, very few people. Europeans knew about it, and there were lots of Europeans there. But it wasn't busy because it was winter and most pilgrims didn't walk in the winter at that time. Today is slightly different. There are more winter pilgrims. There are more places to sleep. There are more albergues. There's just more of everything. But when I went in 2001, it was pretty desolate in the winter. There were about five pilgrims that, you know, we called it our pilgrim family. So I met them along the way, and, you know, we'd we'd bypass each other and then catch up to each other.
So moving ahead, I've read that you have walked the Camino 29 times. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what happened after I wrote a couple of books and I started telling stories and doing keynotes, then people wanted me to take them on the Camino. And at first I said, no, you have to walk alone. And then I realized that it wasn't about their fear of walking alone. It's that a lot of women like to be in community. We love to walk with other women. We love to, you know, walk for the day and then at night sit down and have dinner and share stories and have a laugh. And so I started taking groups. Originally, it was just women. And then I would get, you know, one or two men with each group, but it was mostly women. And that's why I walked it so many times, but not 800 kilometers. You know, I did groups of where we walked 100 kilometers or 220 kilometers or, you know, something shorter, but still intense.
I'm wondering, have you gotten something different out of each experience?
Totally. Yes. People would often say to me, why are you walking the same route? You've already done it. And I'd say, yeah, but that was in another time, another space. I mean, all the trees have grown, the flowers have grown, some of them have died, you know, there's different people, we're in a completely different time and place. And as long as I remained open to that, every single Camino was different and unique and powerful in its own way.
Wow. I like the way you phrase that, of staying open to it, like being open to a new experience each time.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about your coaching experience or kind of getting those groups going, just if that has taught you anything else. I know you mentioned the idea of community and really being in community, especially with other women. Did you learn anything else from coaching people through that experience or any observations from that?
Yeah, I had the same kind of experience that people assumed I would. And that was, I thought, well, once I coached one group, then when the next group came along, I would coach them the same way and I would have the same results. Guess what? I didn't. I had to refine and adapt and flow. You know, as long as I remained rigid in my coaching, it was very difficult. I ran into issues. But if I flowed and just allowed each group to create itself and let them tell me where they want to go with the Camino, then we could create something really unique to that particular group.
That's really beautiful. I like that. Well, I'm excited to hopefully see this film. That's hopefully almost done, right? After 15 years, what a journey. Yeah, fingers crossed.
I know.
Does it have a name yet? Do you know?
Oh yeah. It's called My Camino, which is the name of my book. Yeah. Yeah. And we've just applied to Telefilm for funding. And that's a really big deal. If we get funding from Telefilm, then it will be made.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you. That's very exciting. Okay. So from the Camino, what kind of comes next? Is it the barefoot lifestyle or the Wim Hof method, or what happened from there?
From there, it was barefooting, because when I came home from each Camino that I walked, I would come home and then I love going to the forest. And there was a particular forest really close to my home called Cache Barrens. And I would go to Cache Barrens and walk around. And I felt like I was on the Camino all the time when I was there. And one day I came home from a walk. This was 12 years ago. And I was living on the lake at that time. And I went down to the lake. I was sitting on a rock. And for some reason, I just got this strong feeling that I should take my shoes and socks off and put my feet on the rock. Now, I should just tell you that sometime before that, I had come to understand that I had a very deep, profound connection with Mother Nature. And she was always with me. And if I had something that I couldn't sort out in my life, I could go to the forest and ask her for guidance and then just wait. And always I got an answer. And at one point, a few months before this happened, she gave me a message. And I would get the message, not in words or in a vision, just all of a sudden I knew it. It was in my head. And the message was, bring people back to the forest. And I'm like, You want me to be a forest guide? Like, I don't know if I can do that because I can't remember the names of the plants and the trees, and I'm not good at that. I'm a real touchy feely, like in the moment kind of gal. Anyway, then I kept thinking about this message: bring people back to the forest. And then that day, I took my shoes and socks off, and I put my feet on the rock. And all of a sudden, this powerful energy came from the soles of my feet all the way through my body, like a kundalini energy, and right out my crown chakra, like as a huge release. And I remember just looking out at the lake, and I started laughing because I understood that the way that I was going to bring people back to the forest was with my feet, with my bare feet. I was going to show them that they too could have a connection with the Great Mother, and the easiest and best and most profound way to have that connection is through the soles of our feet. And then I started going barefoot. Took me a long time. Like, I was barefoot all the time, and the first year was really difficult. By the second year, I was getting more and more comfortable, and then now I can run on gravel, I can barefoot in the snow.
So when you say it was difficult, was it just like your feet like physically hurt because it took adapting, or what was difficult about it?
Oh yeah, my feet really hurt. I would stub my toes all the time because when we wear shoes, we don't use our toes. So my toes were very lazy. They didn't know how to lift themselves up while I was walking. They just kind of flopped. And so of course I would run them, roll over them kind of, or stub them. Or I also had aches and pains all over my body because my body was completely out of alignment and I was realigning it. But I also faced the public. I faced the people judging me and commenting and saying, "Ew, that's so dirty and unhygienic." And, "Oh, that's gross. What are you doing? Aren't your feet sore?" And people were just so incredibly rude. And I'm not all people, but if I was on the street or if I was in a town or, going into a store, they would throw me out. And so I decided to just design a pair of shoes that didn't have a sole. They just have a top and a band goes under the arch of your foot, and you put your toes through these holes. And then when I wore these shoes, then people just assumed that I had a sole. They didn't know. They didn't like make the connection that I would actually wear something on the top of my shoe and not on the bottom. And that really helped me through confrontational situations because I don't like confrontation and I don't like being thrown out of the store.
And a little workaround that. Funny. That's a good invention. And so before you went barefoot, had you done any research into it, or it really was just that moment in the forest you felt this urge? Then did you go investigate strategies to do it, or you just went for it?
It's funny. You just reminded me that just before that instance happened by the water, I had been to, I think it was a vegan festival in Toronto. And someone there was selling earthing mats, but they also had the book called Earthing. And I bought the book and put it on the shelf, didn't read it, but I was interested. And then after I had that experience with the rock and that kundalini energy, I went back and said, "I've got a book on earthing. I should read it." And I read the book, and that was it. I was completely convinced that this would be one of the paths of my life.
And so you've been going barefoot for 12 years, and you mentioned, the first year being challenging. Since that first year, I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the changes that you've noticed.
Oh, yeah, it's been fantastic. First of all, when I talked about on the Camino facing fear, it was exactly the same with barefooting. I was constantly facing fear. So whether it was, were people going to comment, the fear of being ostracized or judged was a constant. But the other fears were the fear of, hurting myself, of getting, there was so afraid of, oh, you're going to get warts. Well, you can't get warts in the forest, you know, but, or, you know, disease or something was going to happen to me, or I was going to cut my foot or whatever. All of those fears were what I had to overcome. And so what I found was that, again, it was a psychological thing. I was overcoming these fears. But the other thing that I found is that the more I walked barefoot, the more happy I felt and the more like alive I was. I was like, I just want to go barefoot all the time. Nobody had to say to me, oh, you're wearing, what are you doing wearing shoes? You're supposed to be barefoot. No, I just didn't even want to wear shoes because you have over, they claim at least, I should say, 200,000 sensory receptors on the bottom of each foot. These receptors have a job. Their job is to tell your brain the environment that your body is in. They're called, there's interoceptors, exteroceptors, and proprioceptors. They all have different functions, but they're very, very important. And they tell the brain via neural pathway. And so what I was doing actually was, I call it like, you know, brain exercising. You know, I was using my brain with every step. And my brain and my body was so happy that I was doing that, that I had this feeling of elation all the time. The other thing that happened that I think is really important for your audience too, is I learned that when I wear shoes, or when we wear shoes, almost every pair of shoes have a heel. It might be a little wee heel, but there's a heel. And what that heel is doing is it's tipping us forward. So I didn't even know that my entire body was out of alignment. I had been tipped forward. I forget how old I was. I must have been 54. I was 54 when I started this. So for, let's say 53 years, I'd been wearing shoes. Okay. Because, you know, when I was a baby, my mom put me in shoes. Right. That's what you did. And so all those years I was in shoes and I was tipped forward for all of those years. When you think about it, the strain on your ankles, on your knees, on your hips, on your shoulder, your neck, and your head, everything being tipped over, even if it's a millimeter, it's all out of alignment. And so what started to happen was I was being tipped back. I was actually standing up. So my posture completely changed. Before I started barefooting, I had a double chin. After I was barefooting, I don't think I have a double chin anymore. No, it went away. The only reason I didn't lose weight to get rid of the double chin, I just aligned my body and improved my posture. And so for, you know, just health-wise, like for longevity and for, you know, if we want to, you know, we all want to look young as long as we can. Well, a great way to do that is to be barefoot because your body is going to be in perfect alignment.
It's so interesting to hear about both the physical effects and the mental effects it's had on you, like in a positive way. And just to confirm, so like you have not really put on a pair of shoes in almost 12 years, right?
I have worn shoes. Like there are times there are times you wear shoes. Yeah, absolutely. Like my daughter's wedding, I didn't want to show up barefoot. You know, you don't want to take the attention away from the bride. Yeah. A little while later when everyone was dancing, of course we kick off our shoes and keep dancing, right? But mm-hmm. Everybody was doing it. And there are times when I couldn't get into a restaurant or certain stores. So depending on whether I needed to get into that store or not, I would put shoes on. And the other thing is sometimes your feet get really sore. If you've been barefooting a lot, like just the skin on the bottom of your feet gets tender or sore. So there might be a very odd situation where I would put on shoes, probably on the Camino. Like I did walk the Camino barefoot, but I had to put shoes on because you can't walk, or I can't walk 20 or 24 kilometers a day for 10 or 12 days barefoot. It's too hard on my feet.
You didn't Camino barefoot?
Yeah, I did. I forget how many. I think about 15 of them barefoot.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
I know.
Do you have advice for someone who's interested in interested, but wants to do it only a little bit or anything like that? Who isn't willing to commit, but is interested. What would you say?
Well, I would say, first of all, that you don't have to be barefoot 24/7 like me. I just got onto it and I can't let go of it. I love it so much. But if you can just spend some of your day every day barefoot. So, for example, the best place to go barefoot is in the house. It's safe. You know your way around. You know, chances are you're not going to injure yourself in any way. And you know, you want to have successes because success breeds success. So you want to start off your barefooting journey and have a really good experience. And then I would say in the winter, it's so much fun. Oh my gosh, to go outside in the snow. Oh, you wouldn't believe how many of my followers have done that. You just go outside, put your feet on the snow, and then it's guaranteed that you will laugh. Absolutely guaranteed. You will laugh and then you'll dance around and then run back in the house. And even if you do that, that is so good for for your mental health, but also your feet are like waking up to something freezing cold, something they may have never felt before. And you're giving your feet that sensation, which means that you're giving your brain a whole new sensation. And I always say to people, when you think of barefooting, when you do barefooting, try to never use the word pain and instead use the word sensation, because that's what it is. It's not pain, it's a sensation. It's going to your brain and your brain is going to interpret it. So let your brain interpret it. And if it interprets it as dangerous or unsafe, your brain honestly will, you know, it's like a maestro. It'll tell your body what to do. It'll move your foot out of the way. Like that's what my brain does for me now. If I'm about to step on something sharp, as soon as I get close to it, there's like a 8-inch or 12-inch or I don't know how many centimeters that is, space where my feet can actually read the environment now. They've gotten so smart. So, you know, so just think about doing it in the house. Go outside if you can, go put the garbage out or walk to your car and carry your shoes and, you know, then put them on when you go in a store or whatever. But just try to find scenarios where you don't need to have your shoes on and then explore that. Explore grass, explore sand, rock, live water, and then you'll get all the effects of earthing. Plus, you'll get different sensations.
Like that. It feels attainable to think, okay, I can, go barefoot in my house for
Yeah.
a couple hours, that sort of thing. Okay, so from barefooting, I'd love to hear, and please correct me, again, I don't know if the cold water stuff came first and then you found the Wim Hof method, or if you found the method and then decided to do cold water exposure, but I know you also do cold water exposure. So I'd love to hear about how that started.
Yeah, so that really started because, first of all, I learned to love barefooting in the snow and on ice and anything cold. And I would constantly be out in the snow and I wanted to learn more about it. The problem was that people didn't take me seriously because they just thought that I was like, just, you know, being silly or looking for attention or just trying things to be different. And in fact, it wasn't that at all. Then there was a Facebook group for barefooters, and this man from Germany sent me a private message, and he said, "Sue, have you seen this guy? Like, there's a Dutch guy who goes barefoot in the snow just like you." And by the way, that's the first and last time that Wim was ever compared to me. But anyway, it was Wim Hof. And I looked him up and I said, oh my goodness, he has science behind him. If I can help start to understand the science that he has behind his method, maybe it'll cross over to barefooting and people will take me more seriously. And then they'll start to do it because I really wanted everybody to give it a try because it's so good for your health and it's so easy and it's free. I ended up looking up Wim Hof and found out that there was a winter expedition in Poland that he was doing. And I was going to be in Europe around that time. And so I contacted them and there weren't any spots left. But then one opened up a couple of weeks before the expedition started. And I ended up signing up. So I did a 5-day experience with Wim, learned the breathing method, learned cold therapy. So what we did was we did plunges in this river in Poland, up in a mountain. We also climbed a mountain for 2.5 hours in shorts and a tank top, and it was minus 20 degrees when we got to the top of the mountain. and it was snowing, and it was just all about learning how you can access the inner fire in your body. Like there's heat in your body. You learn to access that, and you learn to use your breath to command your mind, because that's the way it goes. The breath commands the mind, and the mind commands the body. So it all starts with the breath. And that, because I lived on a lake and I was able to cut a hole in the lake, in the ice, and then jump in it all the time, I got really good at doing the ice baths. And then I decided to become an instructor. So I did my instructor, I think it's 4 or 5 years ago now. I get the years mixed up because of the last couple. But yeah, I've been an instructor for quite a while and I just love it.
Okay, so I have my first kind of question that I just feel like I have to ask because I'm so curious, is with all this cold exposure, how do you do it safely or in a way that feels safe to you when you're first learning?
Well, first of all, it's best to take a course from an instructor, a certified instructor, because there is science that backs this whole method and there are things that you need to know and understand about the way that your brain works and the way that your body is going to respond to the cold. It's like anything. When you know what's about to happen, then you're prepared and you're ready for it. And you also learn how to breathe properly to get through it. And also, you know, an instructor has been trained to teach you. So there are people out there now that are, you know, just saying, well, you know, they read it on the internet and they followed Wim's videos and now they know what to do. Well, you know, it's up to you. That's something you want to do. I'm not like that. I would prefer to go to an expert and learn the right way the first time so that I don't have to undo things. Also, you never do an ice bath alone. You always do it with someone else, and you'll start to understand. You'll just know after the fundamentals workshop. It's a 4.5 hour workshop that covers everything, and you do an ice bath. It's just fantastic. You leave it. Everybody leaves feeling invigorated and energized and, you know, ready to really take command of their own health. And because the benefits are so incredible, you want to do it again and again.
I love that answer. So thank you. That was very informative. I'd love to hear about the benefits that you've had from doing this and the changes you've noticed.
Oh, the changes I've noticed from cold therapy. First of all, there's a clarity in my mind, just a clarity about making decisions or about knowing what to do next in my life. You just, it's like your brain wakes up, and I sometimes even feel like I'm years younger after I get out of an ice bath. And the effects of it last up to 6 days, but over time, the more you do it, then the effects just become standard in your body. The other thing that you notice is there's an incredible cardiovascular workout. I even have said, I feel like I just did an hour workout in the gym.
Wow.
I've done a 2 minute ice bath because your cardiovascular system and all your blood vessels are, you know, they're vasoconstricting and vasodilating, and you have, you know, muscles inside your vascular system. You have, they're called smooth muscles, and they help to vasoconstrict and dilate. And so you're actually working out these muscles that don't get a chance to work out that often, because we live in this world where we want to be comfortable all the time. You know, we don't want to go through fluctuations of cold and hot. We just want to be like, you know, just perfect all the time. And it makes for an extremely lazy body, a lazy brain. It means that muscles atrophy, that our body doesn't work as efficiently or as sharp as it could, because it doesn't need to. It doesn't need to like make you warm and then make, you know, and then cool you down. So when you do an ice bath, you're actually practicing, you know, survival with your body, because you go right into a full fight or flight scenario, and then you drop back into rest and digest. And then this is really good. Also, you get a nice little dopamine rush So instead of craving chocolate, for example, I don't crave chocolate anymore. I crave cold water. And when I get in the cold water, my dopamine levels go up and I'm happy.
That's so interesting. I definitely crave chocolate and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll take a cold shower instead.
Yeah, it's a great way to start. Start with a cold shower. I will tell you that I think showers are in some ways more difficult than a cold plunge, because you can put a little bit of water on your shoulder and then the rest of your body, you don't totally immerse. So the more that you can immerse under the shower, like just go for it, the better off it is, but the more difficult it is.
How long are you in the water, or how long do you have to be to feel the benefits?
The majority of the benefits happen within 90 seconds to 2 minutes. So you don't have to stay any longer. I have stayed much longer than that, but I don't recommend it. And I don't even want to do it. It's just that if there's a day where I feel like I could just hang out in the cold water and I want to, then I do it. But it's not a competition. 2 minutes is enough. That's all you need.
You mentioned earlier, part of this is learning to control your breath, which then controls your body and the response. How was that for you? Was there a learning curve with learning to have that control over your breath? And what was it like?
Oh, yes, there is definitely a learning curve, because as soon as you get in the cold water, the first thing you want to do is react, right? Because you go into fight or flight. So there's a sympathetic nervous system, it's called. And you go into that place. And when you get there, the first thing you want to do is run. You want to get out of it. Like, that's fight or flight. Let's move it. But instead, what we do is we use our breath and command our brain and then allow ourselves to just be in that place. And then all of the systems in place and the hormones that have to be released and the chemicals that need to be released in the body, they all get released in I call it a normal way, but it's normal for that environment. Now your body is going back and your brain is working in the way it's designed to. For me, at first I wanted to breathe really fast. I didn't want to breathe slowly. That's insane. Why would you sit in 0 degree water and breathe slowly? But because I was so in love with cold water when I got in it, I wasn't before, but once I got into it, I just love the sensation. I love the feeling. I love how I felt afterwards. Then I just practiced. I'm extremely disciplined. And if I want to learn something, I practice it until I get it right. And that's exactly what I did. And anybody can do it, just about anybody.
And you do that every day. It's part of your routine.
Not in the summer, not every day. In the winter, most days. Yeah. But in the summer, the problem is ice melts outside and it's really complicated to get a really cold bath. So I've had a couple of ice baths inside because I got myself an antique clawfoot bathtub and it's so amazing for ice baths. But yeah, I do it in the summer. I tend to do it more like every 4 to 6 days.
Okay. And you still feel those benefits?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So something I want to ask you, you just said that you're really disciplined. And so if you, set your mind to something, you do it, which I think is definitely very demonstrated by starting with the Camino and everything we've talked about. And I wanted to ask you, I know that the Camino represented a big shift for you, but had you always been someone who was interested in wellness or committed to wellness in the way that you are, or like, where did this come from? Or also, where did that discipline come from, do you think? Just part of who you are? Or I'm just kind of curious about that.
I think the discipline is a part of who I am, because I can remember when I was quite young, if I wanted to learn something, and I wanted to learn a lot. I wasn't like the type of kid that did one thing. I did everything, because I was just like, I couldn't get enough of experiencing. It was probably sensations in my body and experiencing, facing fear and going through it. Actually, I don't think I've ever said that before in a podcast or an interview, but that's probably what it is that I just wanted to get over fear. I wanted to be able to live freely. And I think that I did become a a world-class masters rower. I went to the World Masters Rowing Championships with a group of eight women, and our average age was 43, and we won a gold medal. And that was, I was 45 years old. And that's when I realized that at 45 years of age, I could be world-class. Like, that was big. I thought at 45, I was a cow put out to pasture. You know, no, I was never going to be world-class in anything, but that's not so. And here I am, you know, when I was 65, I went viral on TikTok. It's not even my, you know, social media. It's not for 65-year-olds. So it's, I think it's, you know, it's that idea of opening up your mind to the possibility that, you know, something you can't even imagine could happen. And by connecting to nature and connecting to the cold and connecting to the ground and, you know, allowing your body to explore what it knows intuitively, the way it's designed to work, allowing it to do that just in the end makes you a better person. It makes you stronger, makes you happier. You know, it makes you fearless. And it gives you, it makes you feel really, really great about yourself. And it's a great way to, in the cold water, I call it, I shook hands, but not like a handshake. I used my left hand. It's like I shook hands with my soul in the cold water. Wow. I don't know.
Like it really gets spiritual for you. Like it really connects you.
Totally. It's so spiritual. Cold water is more spiritual than anything, but it doesn't look like that.
Well, it's actually funny you mentioned TikTok because I told a friend that I was talking to you and I'm not even on TikTok, but I sent her a link to your TikTok and we were talking and she was like, that's just so interesting that, you know, this woman in her 60s is even on that platform. And we thought it spoke to your willingness to try new things, which I think you kind of just touched on. So we wanted to ask you about that. Were you intimidated to be on a platform or learn that technology or put yourself out there on this app that's really about like teens doing, you know, trending dances?
So I think if I go back to the reason I went on the platform, it's a very different reason than I think the majority of people go on. It was the beginning of the pandemic. It was March 27th. And since the 14th of March, every night I was waking up in the night, I was having dreams. I was worried, so worried about all the kids and the teenagers. I thought, what are they doing at home? What if they don't like their parents? What if their parents don't like them? What if they're sent to their room with their phone and they have nothing to do and they're high, high stress and they can't see their friends and they can't see their girlfriend or their boyfriend or whatever? And I couldn't sleep because I was thinking about all the kids in the world who were going through this. And I finally started talking to Mother Nature and saying, you know, what do I do? Like, what am I going to do? How can I help them? And then it was the obvious. One morning, March 27th, I woke up. I was watching the news, which I never watched, but because it was the beginning of the pandemic, I was watching the news and they showed a little TikTok video of, I think it was a dog doing something silly. And I went, TikTok. I'll go on TikTok. So I opened it up, set up myself as Barefoot Sue. And then I said, okay, well, I guess I'll just videotape myself. And I saw the red button. I didn't know you could upload videos at that time. I thought you had 15 seconds. So I pointed the phone down to my feet and I pressed record. And I said, hi, my name is Barefoot Sue. I live a barefoot lifestyle. Come and join me on my journey. Stop. And it's me walking around the kitchen in my bare feet. And I had thousands of views. And I went, thousands? I thought maybe I'd reach 100 kids. That would be really great. But thousands. And then the next day, I went down to the water and I stood in the cold water in my, I was in my bathing suit, but you could only see my legs. I didn't show my face for quite a while, but you just saw my legs and my bare feet. And you know, I said, hey, I'm down in the water. It's freezing cold. There's ice. Let me see if the ice will hold me or something like that. And I step on the ice and it breaks. Well, that was it. I broke TikTok when I broke the ice. I had within 24 hours, I had 1 million views.
Wow.
And that's when I realized, oh, I can teach them how to connect with the earth. When things are bad, when you're anxious, when you don't know what to do, go outside, put your feet on the ground, and something will feel good. Guaranteed, you will just feel good. And then I had all these kids, you know, kids writing to me, I showed my videos to your parents and now we're a barefoot family.
That's so fun.
And they called me queen, like queen of, I had like 12 queen titles and like, it was incredible. It was really, really beautiful. And I was so honored to have their, you know, their ear, to have their attention. Yeah. So I taught them as much as I could. And then I basically did it for a year and then I stopped because it was enough. Okay. I did enough. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. So I just have what I call wrap up questions. So just a couple for you. You might have covered these as we go, just three more. The first is, do you have any mantras related to wellness, related to getting through hard things?
You're going to laugh, but what I do is I count.
Okay.
And it is a mantra. It's like a mantra. It has nothing to do with the numbers or there's no association to the numbers. I just started counting when I rode and I used to count to 100 strokes and then I would start counting again. And what I found was that if I just kept counting, then my mind was free, which is what a mantra does. But usually you use a word, but I count. So, and I don't think I've told anybody that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I when I swim, I'm not much the best swimmer, but I'm training for a triathlon right now. All I do is count as well, because it's the only thing to kind of keep me.
To keep it going, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And even on the Camino, I would count to 100 steps and then start counting again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to know, and you might've also mentioned this with the masters that you mentioned, but if you had a favorite accomplishment related to movement or wellness.
Favorite accomplishment. Well, rowing was athletic. It was also very spiritual. I have to say that, but it was more of an athletic accomplishment. I'm actually just, I can't get out of my mind one plunge that I did in the lake. And it was the plunge where I was sitting in the water and I suddenly knew my soul. And we were connected and we were one. And I was so happy that I knew she was there all along, but I just couldn't get that connection. And I would say that, you know, that is a highlight in my life.
I really like that. Thank you for sharing. And last, and I know you just talked about wanting, you know, thinking about kids during the pandemic and really thinking about the youth and the effect on the youth. Wondering if you have advice to younger women around moving their bodies and aging or any of this kind of wellness and aging.
I think for me, the number one biohack of my entire life is barefooting. If that's the only thing you do, you try barefooting, you do it at some point every day, you go outside at some point every day, and you just become aware of the sensations. I think that's the best place to start. And it's natural, it's free, it's available to everyone, and it's so incredibly powerful that I would strongly recommend that. Everything else you can do as well, you know, the things that aren't free and you know, whatever it is you want, but the foundation for all of, you know, of my life, the foundation of my life is barefooting, because that my feet are the foundation of my body and everything sits on top of it. And my feet are speaking to my brain. So I want to make sure that there's a communication going on there. And if you do that, I guarantee something good will come out of it.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Sue. I especially appreciated Sue's thoughts on some of her bigger accomplishments coming in her 40s and beyond. Even though Sue has been going barefoot for 12 years, she didn't start this lifestyle until her 50s. I think it's such a good reminder to remember that, one, life doesn't end for women at 40, and two, that we can make big lifestyle adjustments as we age. I was inspired that Sue is so willing to remain open and believes that she will also continue to evolve. I've been thinking a lot about some of Sue's remarks around letting go of fear and thinking what could happen if fear didn't hold you back. I don't necessarily have the answer for myself, but I think going forward, it is a question that I will be asking myself more regularly. I hope you enjoyed this episode and felt inspired to connect with nature, yourself, or at least remain open. Thanks. Thanks for listening. If you have someone whose story you think should be told, you can email me at questionsformyavo@gmail.com. That's questionsformyavo@gmail.com.